What up, what up, what up? We are here for another episode of the Coco Talk podcast. We are lucky enough to be joined today by Vibe Check Beck, the internet sensation, TikTok superstar. Thank you very much for coming on this morning.
Thank you
for having me on.
Yeah, it's cool just to have like a chat with the people who are behind, you know, social media and what we share. And we all know that authenticity can only go so far on social media, and then sometimes it's cool just to sit down and have like a long form conversation and just to get to know the people who are sharing. But I think the reason why I reached out to you is not only, you know, you're a stay-at-home mama and you got this little side hustle going, but also like I see you supporting so many other Māori and Poly businesses and just sharing all of our work, you know, no matter how big or small. And yeah, you're just like a little weaver on the internet of people and sharing, which is really cool.
Thank you.
Who are you? Who are you? Where are you from? And yeah, where does your story start?
Sure. So I guess let's start right from the beginning. So I'm Rebecca. I do the page Vibe Check Beck, as you just said. So I was born in New Zealand, but I'm from Melbourne. So when I was 11 months old, me and my parents came to Australia, and I've been in Melbourne all my life. My background is Samoan. Fun fact, I can't speak or understand the language. That's a whole other topic to unpack. Mm-hmm. But so I'm a stay-at-home mum. I have three sons. They are 5, 3, and 9 months. Busy at this house. And pretty much my page, my space is, it really started as it is a creative outlet. I've been somewhat a creative person, or I feel like I'm a creative person. And becoming a stay-at-home mum, I kind of needed something to just feel like I was connected to the outside world as well. I suppose when you're a stay-at-home mom, it's like this little, you're in a bubble and you're always just with you and your babies kind of thing. So it started off purely as just wouldn't it be cool if I shared my earring collection on here? So at the beginning, it was called Earring Placeable, I believe. I can't remember. I started it in 2018, this page. So pretty much it was just straight up sharing my collection. I was kind of, there's like this earring community. And then it just changed as I grew as a person, and also just seeing things that I didn't like, I suppose, on social media as well. And like you brought up, Ness, the authenticity. I just really wanted to be, you know, fuck it. I really just want to be me rather than be like this, oh, she just shares earrings and that's it. It was getting old after a while, you know. I'm like, oh yeah. And certain type of people were following me, and I'm like, I feel uncomfortable with what I'm seeing too. As in, I suppose a lot of racist things, not towards me, but just the energy. You could say most of the people that were following me at the time were middle-aged white Australian women. And just the course of that to where we are now, Vibe Check Beck, I was like, I need a change the way I'm sharing and what I'm sharing as well, because I'm just like, I'm not down with what I'm seeing, and just things, you know, pushed to the side, topics pushed to the side. And so that's pretty much it. And now we're at Vibe Check Beck, and this is me.
The racial undertones that you were feeling from these from your original followers?
Just the you'll see me always tagging the maker or the business or whatever, you know. And it was more like, oh, okay, they're sharing certain customers that are also tagging, but when you're looking, it's like, it's all the white customers. I've been tagging you too. Not so much me as in like, oh, I want you to share me because I'm wearing your shit. It was more like, oh, okay, is there a reason why you're sharing that person and this person? Because they all look similar and you're not sharing me. Mm. And it was funny. I thought I was just going crazy because I like to have these conversations with my husband. And there was also another, I suppose, within our earring community, where she was a woman of color, and also here in Melbourne. And we were just chatting, and I just said, you know, fuck, am I going crazy? Or do you feel like a similar thing? And she goes, oh, no, I feel it, I see it. And what hit the real thing of me of wanting to change the way I share was the whole the time of the George Floyd death, rest in peace George Floyd, and the Black Lives Matters movement. Yeah, I actually went on my stories and jumped on because I was just expressing how I was quite disappointed in a lot of businesses who I supported and follow that were quiet. And, you know, that were quiet during that time or not really talking about it. And my point was to them, because I was getting a lot of DMs at the time from these businesses run by white women. And the whole like, oh, no, but I'm learning at home. And, or, you know, I don't understand. I'm trying to learn. And my whole thing was, okay, that's all good. That's all good that you're doing that. But the thing that got me was I've seen you like, you know, openly support the bushfires, the you know, the animals, the women's rights, things like this, big things that you don't have to do. So why is it when topics of race come up, it was big that time, and everybody was quiet. And it just really pissed me off a bit. And I'm like, right, this is the turning point of where I really want to just be me more. I suppose back then too, I was just like, oh, I'll just keep it to how I'm sharing. I'll just do the earring thing. And that's it. I don't want to make ripples, or I don't want to be out there being, you know, sharing this stuff. Oh, why are you sharing that stuff, Beck? You know, kind of thing. But I'm like, no, nah, fuck that. Because I had enough of that, and I don't want, I suppose, my kids, my husband seeing all, you know, I want to stand up. If I'm like that at home, I want to do that on my public space as well, you know? So, yeah, I'll never forget the one DM that really I'm like, I know I'm doing the right thing, was a business, I think, in Queensland, quite a successful earring business. She mailed me saying, you know, Beck, I don't really agree with what you're saying. And she goes, I don't like to openly talk about, you know, the whole thing because I'm learning about it and me and my family are doing the work at home. But, you know, I don't want to upset certain customers. That's why I don't share that stuff. And I'm like, okay.
Well, oh, fuck up.
Yeah, you know, yeah, hard out. I was like, can you see what you're typing? It's just shit like that. So that was the pivoting pretty much turn of where we're at now. And, you know, obviously not the Insta reels, that's just me being an egg. you know, I like to use my platform and I'm like, fuck this. You know, there's so many amazing Māori and Pacifica businesses, people, even our First Nations people here within Australia. I'm like, fuck this. Yeah, you're going to see all that. Even activism, mental health, all that. I'm just like, you're getting it. And even from that time when I said, you know, this is why I'm changing. If you're with me, you're with me. If you're not, all good. And, yeah, a lot of white women, see ya. They all pretty much just unfollowed. And I'm like, that's all good. I'm weeding out all that crap. And, yeah. People eat, a lot of new people followed, but numbers and that, I don't really care. I don't even care if one person was following me. I'd still be the same because it's something that I love. I guess you could say quite passionate about. I just want to see how people win, you know? That's it.
Bro, it's interesting, man. We talked to like a few like Instagram people that do have a bit of a following and they all say the yeah. same thing you just said. They're like I don't really, like I try to stay away from comments, likes and shares and stuff to just like, I really enjoy being transparent on there.
Yeah, Hard Out. That was definitely the biggest one. I kind of already was like, how do I just be more me without, I suppose, giving too much? Because, you know, I want to keep some of that energy for myself as well, you know, and obviously my family. So that's why I thought, no, I'm just going to share more people that look like me, that sound like me, that we all think similar experiences. And those who want to follow, they can. And it's actually been really good. I haven't had too much trouble of like blatant, you know, racism or bigotry on my page, which is really, really good, because I know there are a lot of amazing activists in that I see. And I'm just like, far out. The stuff they deal with every day, the comments, it even makes me angry. I think I had like a 2-week break just off social media, because I'm just like, oh. It's draining even for me to be like, I can't handle this, you know, kind of thing. Like, I'm happy to support, but just seeing that people getting, you know, you're an effing B, effing, you know, all these things, I'm just like, yeah, it's heartbreaking and also draining to see.
How, because you spoke about racism and, you know, because you born in New Zealand and then moved to Melbourne, and, you know, even before the podcast, you know, your environment or reality and the people you're hanging around with possibly didn't, you know, look like you. How did you, because I sort of know the feeling of moving away, having like a white community, which is cool, you know, and then trying to move back, or then support your own people, and then there's kind of like this weird in-between sort of thing that happens. I don't even know if there's like a word for it or a language, but yeah, I guess how did you have to deal with racism growing up, or was this kind of a new thing for you when it came to social media?
Oh, no. I suppose growing up here in Australia, oh yeah, I dealt with it. My parents dealt with it. So pretty much throughout where we lived in growing up here in Melbourne, it was quite multicultural, but there weren't many Polynesians or Maori families, you know, at the time. As the years went on, more of them were coming in, and there's all, you know, a lot here now. And so growing up, most of my friends were white Australian or other ethnicities, but mostly white Australian. So it was funny, I was talking to my husband about a week ago about it. It's like you don't realize until, well, for me, I didn't realize until I got older, like, oh, I was like the token brown friend amongst all my white friends. And then I'm like, fuck, you're racist as fuck, man. You know, just little, you know? Just because, you know, at the time, I suppose when you're young too, this wasn't so much like now. It was more like primary school, high school, even in like my early 20s, where you think just comments that would not fly, no way now. But I suppose when you're trying to find yourself as a person too, you kind of still want to fit in with people. But I'm like, shit, you know, obviously that's, you know, followed me through life, because I'm like, I just let all that shit slide. Without a heartbeat, thinking maybe I should have pulled them up on that. But you know, I mean, most of the time it was all good. You know, I used to play netball a bit, and you know, again, a lot of white girls was called a black bitch, damn, was called a black this. Yeah. It got to a point where my coach like had to call a meeting. And all the girls were in there because he was just not happy with the energy. But yeah, you could tell. I felt it. I was actually really shy growing up. So a lot of the time I was the type of person, I just took it on the skin. But really, I was holding everything until I would blow up or snap or something, you know, whether it be at my parents, my sister, maybe at the time a boyfriend, you know. It was holding on to all that without realizing, and then blowing at people that I loved. Really not taking it out on the right people. But so for a long time, even through high school, it was mostly white Australian friends. So it wasn't until the end of my schooling, and then I got into clubbing days.
what are those?
That's when I, yeah, I know, long time ago. I met more Maori and Polynesian, especially Samoans. I met a lot more of them, you know, boys, and it was the whole thing. Like, I'm like, oh, these people look like me, you know. Like, we listen to the sound, the same music, you know, we talk the same, similar. But then that's when that happened with them, where, you know, they would speak Samoan to me, and I'd be like, oh, shit, sorry, I can't, you know, speak it or understand it. And then bang, oh, you're a plastic. You're a plastic Samoan. You're a wannabe. And that was a whole new thing for me. More of that than so the racism. I suppose, like, I knew I was brown, so I was like, oh, you know, whatever. But when it came to, I suppose, your own people, my own people, I was like, what? You know, I was like, I'm not trying to be anything. I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to be Samoan or anything. I especially got it from Samoan girls, where I'd meet them for the first time. And as soon as I'd try to speak it, I'd be like, oh, I can't speak it or understand it. And they straight away were like, oh, plastic. And then that really got to me more than racism from whoever. It was more that, you know, like, not feeling worthy enough, not feeling like, you know, oh, I'm so close to being with, you know, my people, but they're not even accepting me. So it was almost like I was too white for, you know, my brown peeps, and too brown for the white peeps. So, like you were saying, this, it was this being stuck in the middle. I'm like, who am I? And you know, my parents were very open. So my parents are New Zealand born Samoan. So even with that, a lot of, you know, they can speak English really well. They sound like me. You know, I'm not judging anybody, but not your typical, I suppose, that people see, like, oh, your parents are like fresh. They don't go to church. Like, my parents were the type, like, they were the ones that typical, you know, my grandparents are old school, you know, go to church, all that kind of stuff. And whereas my parents, I suppose, when they grew up and we got old enough, when we were talking with them, they wanted to break cycles. They didn't want to have that thing where, oh, no, we don't talk to you about boys or sex or anything, because they, like, we didn't have that with our parents, and they just knew that they didn't want that when they had kids. They wanted to break cycles. But I think too, coming to Australia, where obviously we all speak English, I think maybe in their own way too, that the language kind of lost, because my dad could speak it fluently, but being here for so many years, his Samoan became broken. He could only understand it, whereas my mum could still speak it and understand it, but really she was saying, oh, I've lost it over the years too. So it was just, they would always say, you know, you are who you are, you come from a strong Samoan family, just be who you are. But, you know, at the time when you're young, you're like, I just want them to accept me, like, what the hell, I'm a good person, I'm a nice person, you know, can't they get past that? So yeah, that probably hurt the most, from your own people getting the whole, you're a plastic. I really hate it. I hate it. I'm one of those, I'm like, please, please do not call me that. I hate that. The whole, you're a plastic. No, I'm not. I'm not a plastic anything.
Bro, I remember when I was in high school, and one of my Samoan mates, so he couldn't really understand it either. And I remember calling him a plastic one time. And then someone explained to me what a fucking plastic meant. But I felt like the biggest asshole, eh? Like, not everyone gets the opportunity to learn. And then when you, like, make fun of them when they don't even have a chance to, like, pick up the culture or learn the language, like, you're just being an asshole, really. It's,
Yeah, hard out. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like they're just going off by language. They don't realize that my parents still brought us up with core Samoan values, you know. I know how to respect people. I'm not out here, you know, and I respect elders, all that
hospitality
stuff. I'm not just like, oh, she's, yeah, you know, I'm not just in Australia, oh, she doesn't know anything. Mm. Like, oh, just walk in front of the elders and whatever, yeah. Talk, you know, I'm not that. So for me, the word plastic was like, oh, you're like, you want to be white. Mm. You're trying to be a white person. But I'm like, no, I'm not. This is just me. So for a long time, because within our family, we've got a lot of, you know, like Māori Samoan, Cook Islander Samoan, you know, even Australian Samoan. So with, I'll never forget, like, these good friends of ours, me and my sister, I've got a younger sister. I think we were friends with them for like 2 or 3 years already. And they'd come around our house because my parents were that even open that we would have drink ups at our house. That's why, you know, like, that's what I mean. I think for a lot of even our own Samoan friends, they were like, what the hell? Like, your parents let you do that? Yeah, you know, that's why, you know. And I'll never forget, he's like, yeah, Bertha, because you're half Māori, eh? And I'm like, I'm Samoan, bro. And he goes, what? He was, like, even shocked. He goes, what? And I'm like, how long have you known? Like, how long have you known me? And you thought I was like, you know, half. And he's like, what the hell? That's fuzzy ass. But I think it wasn't so much the language. It was the nature of the relationship I had with my parents. So even me learning that, I felt, I suppose, left out. You know, they're making jokes about church, you know, things or like Samoan jokes and that. And I would still be like, get it. But my parents would get it. You know, I'd tell them, oh, mom, so-and-so said this, and they would crack up laughing, and I'm like, is that funny? You know? Yeah. Yeah, things like that. So, yeah, I was like, what? This whole time. But even my parents coming here, my dad's a crack-up man, because he had a lot of good friends that were Māori, and one of them gifted him a really nice tonga. And he would say back in the day, if they'd go to like a Siva or something, he'd wear it and they'd be like, oh, kia ora, bro, like, kia ora. Or, you know, anywhere if you would go to like a Samoan thing, like they would always think my dad was something else other than Samoan until he started speaking it, or he could understand, like he could hear people on the side be, I suppose, backstabbing him in Samoan, and he'd tell them and they're like, oh, what the hell? Even, you know, even my mum too. But again, I think it just comes to the nature of how they were. They, I guess, at the time, they weren't your typical fob parents, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah.
So that they were really open. That's what I said. You'd have drink ups. You were allowed to have drink ups with friends at home. And yeah, yeah. Interesting.
You're talking about like your parents being open. It's funny, we had like a conversation in the DMs. I put something up about, it was like the podcast that we recorded about going to the pawn shop, or was it Honey Burdette? Yeah. And our beautiful
adult store.
A beautiful experience. And anyway, you messaged me and like shared your experience of what that was like. Mad pivot, Vanessa, but yo, let's just get into the dildos.
For about 2 or 3 years, I was in, so mid to late 20s. I'm 35 now.
Me too.
But yeah, mid to late 20s. My cousin was working, I won't say the name for whatever legal reasons, but was working in an adult store, and it's quite a big one here in Melbourne. And at the time, like, I was just doing factory work. It was casual, and I'm like, shit, I need like another job. So I hit her up. I'm like, you know, is there any positions going? And she goes, yeah, just, you know, do the whole thing, send in your resume. And, you know, like, my parents didn't think anything of it. I just said, oh, I think it was more just a safety thing, because you think like a adult store, there's going to be like creepy people and all this type of stuff, like late night working. But yeah, so I started there. And now this particular adult store, it's always in like a large factory setting, so it's not like your little dingy one hidden in the back where it's dark. it's pretty much, their whole thing is that they want to market themselves to couples and women. So you'll always see, like, from, it is like always in like those industrial areas, but it's well lit. In the front, you'll always see mannequins with lingerie. And so it's inviting somewhat. It's not like, oh, I'm going into a creepy adult store. So, yeah, pretty much when I went there for content, there were no other people of colour working there. I worked at a few of the different stores around within the company, and there were no other people of colour. I was the only... Oh, apart from she was Chilean. Yeah, but apart from that, it was like white Australian. And so, you know, I didn't think of anything of it. I'm quite an open person, so I'm like, I'm all good to start. It was just a retail position anyways. We didn't have to do much. It was more like, you know, just go up, say, do you need help? If not, don't be like in their face like, do you want to do that? They weren't like hard on sales. You know, it was just more like, because it's quite an open place, you know, just let the customers do what they want to do. And when they come to you, then, you know, talk to them and whatever. So pretty much, I know we were talking next that there were even customers coming in, no people of color. It was, again, predominantly white Australian people, or, you know, European people. Coming in, and it was funny, I didn't really take any notice of that until we were talking about it that time I messaged you, and I'm like, shit, yeah, there were no other people of color working there or even customers coming in. But I just remembered this one time I was filling in at another store, at another adult store, and I remember I'm assuming he was some sort of Polynesian, I just thought he was Samoan. He walked in like, he looked like, oh, yeah, I'm going to walk in. I think it was a lunchtime shift I was on. So it was like during the day. And he walked in and I'm like, hi, how are you going? And he saw me and his face was like he was, it's like you almost saw a ghost. And then he walked back out. And I just remember, I'm like, no, I'm not going to judge you or anything like that. But I was like, yeah, he was like happily walking in, not expecting to see, you know, someone that looked like him to be working there. And, yeah, I just remember thinking, oh, shit. He was probably like, oh, what the hell? Oh, I didn't expect, you know, another Polynesian to be working here. What the hell? They're going to judge me. She probably knows my mum. Or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, what questions do you have for me? I mean, that was pretty much the gist of it.
Pretty much that, like, because I don't know, I've never, every time that I've been into an adult store, the person behind the counter doesn't really look like me or Gerhard, and the people in there doesn't look like us. And not that that's a bad thing, but I just wondered like how many people of color are actually going to adult stores, and is it a shame thing, or is it they just don't like to use it and they prefer to, you know, just because they don't participate in it doesn't mean that there's something wrong. But then maybe there is, because, yeah, I just imagine, you know, that fella walking in, it's like, bro, you might look like my sister or my auntie or something like that.
Yeah, hard out. You know, I remember one time my husband, because I was working till midnight and he had to drop my wallet off, boyfriend at the time, him and his mates, another Samoan dude, and I think the other guy was Maldi, because my husband's Maldi Seychelles. And I go, babe, can you drop my wallet off? You're going to have to come. And he goes, yeah, sweet. But he was telling me, like, when they all walked in and his mates, again, you know, Maldi, Pacifica, they're coming in, but they're all, like, behind him, like, you know, what the hell is that? What the hell is that? And I'm like, can you guys shut up? It's like, just relax, Dad, relax. But, you know... I think it was, I remember listening to one of your guys' podcasts last night about sex and shame, and it got me thinking, I think culturally our people, you know, like, don't get me wrong, my parents were open, but even I suppose when you pick up on energy, like, from your grandparents or, like, your fresh uncle or whatever, I was thinking, like, oh shit, yeah, you get that whole, like, even though I was working in that shop, it wasn't certain things, even my attitude, like, outside of, like, oh, you touch porn, like, back then I was quite even like, oh, what? But I'm working in a shop. But I think, like, culturally, we do have this thing like, oh, that, that's naughty, or, oh, you shouldn't be doing that, you know, like stuff like that. So, yeah, when I was listening to your podcast, I'm thinking, Farah, oh, that's probably why a lot of, not even within Māori and Pacifica culture, I suppose other cultures as well, similar thing, people of colour, you know, I think religion plays a big part within a lot of cultures, why sex is seen as like, we just keep that on the hush kind of thing. And yeah, when I remember when we were talking this about it, I felt a somewhat sadness because just thinking back, I'm like, yeah, there were hardly none, actually none that I can remember, people of color walking through those doors. It was white people. So that was like, I'm like, shit, that says a lot, you know. Or like I said, like that guy that came in, but he was like, ah, oh, like wasn't expecting another person of color, or, you know, another Polynesian to be behind the counter and be like, oh, fuck, and then walked out, you know. So again, I think it's that whole like, oh, shame, she's gonna think. But I'm like, you know, I'm working here, bro, I'm not judging you at all. But again, it's that whole, I think, cultural aspect, why we probably don't go in there. You know, I went in, I remember before working there ages ago when I was like 18, and my friend got his first car. White, these are all my white mates. And they were like, yeah, let's go to the adult store. Even then, like I said, my parents were open. They would talk to me and my sister about relationships, sex, all that. And, but even then when I was there, I'm like, oh, gross. You know, like, I guess that comes with a maturity thing as well. But yeah, you know, I'm going with my white mates, not going with, you know, my brown mates to a sex shop, you know, when you're a teenager. For fun. And yeah, so a lot of things after our conversation there. So I just thought, yeah, wow, it brings up a lot of questions as to why we people of color are not going there or talking about it openly, about sex openly.
That's what I found when I came to Australia, is like my mates, even at a young age, would go to an adult store to have fun and like have a laugh. It was the weirdest shit, and I loved it because I was a horny little bitch. I was like, man, this is giving me like real permission to like share this like fun, exciting side of me that I couldn't really share, you know, with my Pacifica or brown friends. And that's what I learned, I think, from being here, was how open people can be, open-minded, and not take things so seriously. And then trying to, like, you've cultivated that attitude in some way, and then you like mix and mingle again with your brown community, and then it's sort of a bit jarring sometimes of how open you are about certain things. And I think we're even talking on a podcast yesterday with Zane and Stacey about finding safe spaces for our people to heal, whether it's breathing or any kind of work that we need to do, but also intimacy, like where do we go to feel safe, or is it something that we just, you know, just be confident in? Bro, I'm not saying brown people need to fucking go to adult stores to change their lives, but, you know, if it's available to others, then how can we also, like, participate in that without feeling, like, so much shame or judgment
I totally get that, because it just brought up, I suppose, when I was hanging out with, like, my Polynesian friends, especially girls, like, you know, we would dirty talk, but it was kept in there. It didn't go out. So if, I suppose, you know, when you go clubbing and that, we weren't like, you know, to guys, I suppose, to other Polynesian guys, you know, let's, you know, F here and there, whatever, you know, wild things. We weren't openly talking about that. It was more just like you go to the club and hook up. So I think I was even feeling that energy, even though, like I said, I come from quite open background, but again, trying to navigate myself and fit into spaces, it was more like, yeah, you know, oh, she's a slut because she's been with how many people. But that's the energy, I suppose, culturally, if you're, you know, sex is a bad thing. I was having a conversation with my mum about it. I'm like, far out, it's so funny how I'll just talk about, you know, obviously my family, you know, like, oh, you know, the older Samoans would be like, oh, you know, she's dirty or he's got so many kids, the gossiping and all that. But, like, I remember conversations hearing, like, because my grandmother used to be in, like, a old, like, a elder Samoan group. And me and my, like, mum and a couple of my other Samoan friends would go, like, make them lunch and that. They'd play cards and stuff. And but the conversations they would have, they were, like, dirty as. So, you know, and I'm like, it was funny, just me and my mum talking about it. And she goes, yeah, we're, like, we're probably, like, the horniest people on the planet. But we keep that, you know, closed and, like, to our own kids who were like, oh, you know, turn the TV off, they're kissing. You know,
pause my mum would tell fast me forward.
Like that. Yeah, you know, why are you watching that? Or they even hugging, you know? So, you know, me and my sister would laugh at, you know, their experience. And, like, you know, just like my parents, like, we didn't want that for you. We didn't want you to find out a way of, you know, like, going, hiding things. Mm. Hiding, like, you've got a boyfriend, hiding that you've had sex and things like that, because they had to, you know, deal with all that. So, yeah, it's just funny. Like, I suppose we can talk about it, I suppose, maybe with our peers, people, you know, our mates and that who are Polynesian. But when it comes to anything else, we, like you said, Ness, I think it's a safety thing too, because of, you know, we can relate. And if we tell other people that are, I suppose, not from our culture, or, you know, it's kind of like, oh, shame, I'll just keep it to myself kind of thing. Yeah. So, yeah, it is interesting, the whole culture and sex. And I suppose being at a sex shop and learning, I'll give you a good example, that before, when I first started, I remember my boss telling me there was, I think she was Filipino, a Catholic, very staunch Catholic family. And but she said she was one of the best workers there. And her husband knew that she was working at the shop, fine with it. But her family, extended family, didn't know. So because she had no idea what sex toys, whatever, it was just a job to her, kind of like all of us, just a job.